Well, folks, as we open up our culture segment of the show, I would like to ask you, do you consider yourself to know and understand your emotions or not? In fact, most of you are probably saying, I am or I am not an emotional person. Well, I think there's a lot of confusion around the idea of emotions, especially in the church. But fortunately, we have Mark Allen Shelsky here. He is the author of The Wisdom of Your Heart. He is also a teaching elder at a church in Oregon. He's been there full time for 18 years. He's a writer, speaker, husband, father. And he also rides a motorcycle and drinks tea, which may or may not play into this conversation. We will see. So, Mark, it's great to have you on The Boundless Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, certainly. Okay, like I said, I think this is one of those things where people have a lot of misconceptions about emotions and the value of emotions and whether you're emotional, you're rational, and what is good, what's better, what's whatever. I think there's a lot of stigma around both. But I want to just jump in because you actually have a lot of story contained within the way that you are exploring emotions, even from a biblical perspective. And I want you to start out by telling us about kind of that day, really the realization that you came to, that you had some pretty major issues with emotions and misunderstandings and all of that. What did that feel like? Talk to us about that realization.
Well, it felt like painful, horrible brokenness and awful things I didn't want to face and admit to myself. And it wasn't a single day. It was the fruit of a painful season, really. You know, I'm a first child. I'm a accomplisher. I didn't realize for much of my life how much of my personal sense of value comes from my ability to get things done and perform well. And I'd been living that way for most of my life. And when you live that way and your value is tied up in what you can accomplish, it's pretty easy for that system to fall apart. And that's what happened for me. We had one child, and then very rapidly after that, we had a second child, and we had some major transitions happening in our lives in my church. And I was living redlined, and some things happened that are longer than a couple of minutes to describe that put me in a place where a lot of pain was leaking out of me, and I didn't know really even what it was, because I'm also a child, adult survivor of childhood trauma. My father died unexpectedly and traumatically when I was 11, and the way that I dealt with that as a kid was that I became the responsible person in the family that held everybody together. My mom got lost in her grief for a time. My sister was 5 years younger than me. And so at 11, I became the person who cooked the family meals and walked my sister to school and made sure that everything worked so that everything would be okay. And that became a tape that I lived out, a program. It's probably a better word because who knows what tapes are anymore. That became a program that I lived out over my life, over and over and over again. You know, one example, when I was in college, I was dating a woman, and very shortly into the relationship, I could tell that this was not the best relationship for either of us, and I was getting ready to break up. And then her very best friend from elementary school that she was still in touch with died traumatically, and that whole program that I'd been carrying my life kicked in. And I couldn't leave her. I couldn't leave her because it was my role to be the person that held the situation together so that everyone would feel okay. And we ended up dating for quite a while longer, and that wasn't great for either of us, and I was living out of this pattern. And so when I'm a 45-year-old man, and I'm having all of the weight of this bearing down on me, well, it was 36 or 37 when it began to happen, I really had an emotional breakdown, a highly functioning experience of depression where on the weekends as a pastor, if you saw me on the weekends, you would think my life was fine. And what you didn't know is that I would get home after the service was done and collapse into bed and wouldn't be able to function or help in any way with my family for 3 days until I'd pull myself out of bed again by my will and try and do it all over again. And my life was just, it was not working. It was getting worse. I was seeing things that mattered to me fall away, and I didn't want to lose those things, and I knew something had to happen, but I didn't have the tools to fix it.
Yeah.
So that was the moment for me when I just realized that this wasn't something I could fix with hard work. It wasn't something I could read a book about and solve. It was something I needed help from outside my head, and that was scary to me because I was wired up to be the guy who solved the problems for other people. And what would it mean if I was the guy who needed help?
Yeah. You were actually 11 when your dad died, but it was years later, I think, as you were talking to one of your aunts who really pointed out that your change as a kid after the death of your dad. What really talk about how did your dad's death affect you? Like, how would you say what would you say you had to do? You had to realize in the wake of that, as far as the years that had gone by in the way that you'd kind of processed life. And what made you say, I need to do this differently from now on?
Sure. Well, I think as kids, one of the difficulties for any of us who had trauma or significant emotional experiences as kids is that when we adapt to those things, our adaptation just feels like normal to us. We don't know that we're doing anything other than just trying to survive. And because we're in our own heads, we don't know that what we're doing to survive may not be the best for us. And so for me, in the circumstance that I was in, I was the only person left in our family that could hold things together. That was the story I had in my head as an 11-year-old. And so I lived that out. And it lined up with my personality, and it lined up with my temperament. And I'm a first child. I'm an adopted child. There's almost always with adopted children, there's a sort of an inward drive to perform. And so all these things lined up, and I did a great job at that, did great at school, did great in early ministry, did great, you know, as I took on leadership roles, got lots of affirmation. And that cycle of performance and affirmation, it worked for me for a long time. But what was happening is that I was not present to or dealing with anything that was going on in me that was a negative emotion. I wasn't processing grief. I wasn't dealing with anger when it came up, because I'm a good Christian man, and good Christian men aren't supposed to be angry, and I'm a pastor, and I should always, you know, have a peaceful attitude with people. And so I was just living in this place where hard emotions were unpredictable, and they were scary, and they were not responsible and mature, and so I didn't deal with them. And one of the biggest myths you mentioned in the beginning is this idea that we can think of ourselves as either more emotional or less emotional people. That's just not true. We're all emotional people. We just may not all realize it. Our emotions are baked into the way our brains work. And when something happens in our inner world or outer circumstances, we have an emotional response. The chemicals get dispensed into the bloodstream. The electrical signals go out. Psychological connections are made. That happens whether or not we acknowledge it or sit with it or even, quote unquote, feel it. That happens in us. And all of that energy and the release of that emotion, it has an impact on us. For some of us who have internalized, it will have a physical impact on our body that can manifest in sickness. It can manifest in physical ailments. It can manifest in depression and other mental illness. Or it can, you know, sort of blow up at inopportune times where we think we're doing fine, and then something will happen that maybe triggers us on a scale of 3, but our reaction is like an 11, and we erupt on someone. And later on, maybe when we're a little more sober looking at that situation, we realize that we overreacted. Well, where did that overreaction come from? It came from emotional energy that was unprocessed. And so that happened for me, but in spades. And so it was dumping out on my wife and my kids and my ministry. And I just got to a place where there was so much of it that I couldn't handle it.
Yeah. What I want to actually move into emotions within the church and the Christian subculture, because I think you actually outline a few myths about emotions. Talk to us about a couple of those. One of them you say is that emotions lie, this myth that, you know, emotions are bad. You know, we know that Jeremiah 17:9 says the heart is deceitful. And I think that kind of throws a lot of people for a loop. talk to us a little
sure.
bit about the myths as you've seen them play out.
Well, I think that one is a big one, right? The idea that our emotions always lie, or perhaps they're superficial, or they're leading us astray. If you grow up in a church community that believes that Satan is an active hand in our lives, then a lot of times emotions will get attributed to Satan as a temptation meant to lead us astray. And that passage that you mentioned, Jeremiah 17:9, you know, that's the definitive reason why Christians shouldn't listen to their emotions, right? The heart is deceitful above all things. The problem with that is that if the story that you have about humanity is that we're fallen, guess what? It's not just your emotions that are fallen. It's your reason, too. And so your capacity to think that you're thinking logically or to think that you're thinking objectively, even that part of you is contaminated by sin. And so you can't give yourself a hall pass and say, well, I'm not following my emotions because that's sinful. I'm carefully thinking things through. Well, guess what? I'm a smart guy. I have the ability to deceive myself with my logic as well. And so the issue is not that emotions lie. The issue is that we don't know how to listen to them. We don't know how to handle them. We don't know how to relate to them. And we miss, because of that, the fact that emotions are built into how we're made. Your emotions lie. If your emotions lie, they lie in the same way that the warning light on the dashboard of your car lies, which usually just means you don't understand it, right? Something's happening under the hood of your car. A light on your dash is triggered. It's telling you something. And maybe you know what that means, or maybe you don't. Maybe you pay attention. Maybe you disregard it and cross your fingers and hope that it will go away. But it's not lying to you. It's giving you important information. And that's something that in the church I was never equipped to understand, that my emotions had something useful to say to me. And so not only did I not have that framework, I didn't have any tools for that. And I think that's very common in the church. I think we'll give people sort of spiritualized tools where we'll say, you know, if you feel something that you are worried that you shouldn't feel, or if you feel like you're being led in a direction that's not godly, then you should just pray more or read scripture more or have an accountability group. And those are fine tools, but if they aren't attending to the fact that that emotion you're feeling means something, there is something important about the feeling you're getting to pay attention to, if it doesn't deal with that, then you're not dealing with the emotion. You're just trying to avoid doing an action. Mm-hmm. And actions always come from somewhere. The biblical language, right, is that the water flows from the heart. You know, that the heart is the center point of our decisions. And if we're not attending to what's going on in our inner life, then just trying to stop doing actions doesn't inevitably solve the problem. And so it doesn't help us have better relationships. It doesn't help us when we're thinking about how to have relationships where we want, you know, are we going to find a partner? Are we going to be married? Are we going to have kids? Like, this impinges on all of that stuff. Choosing a career, you know, I mean, how much of my choice to be a pastor had to do with this part of my story that wired me up to be someone who cares for other people, someone who tries to help other people be safe? Some part of that's tied up in there. Well, if we don't pay attention to and learn from our emotions, we never have access to that.
Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit, Mark, about specifically being a man in the church who is trying to both manifest and process emotion, whether it's in a small group, whether it's in a leadership role, whether it's because I would say that generally, you know, women are given the okay to talk on that level, you know, in their Bible studies, in their small groups. But men, it's kind of like, what do you do with that?
Well, I think the first thing is that some people in a community need to stand up and say that's not in keeping with how God made us. The idea that women are quote unquote more emotional is honestly just a polite way of saying women are less trustworthy. It's not true. All humans are emotional beings. That's how we were created. And the idea that logic is more trustworthy than emotions is also not true. If your story is that we're fallen, then our logic can be just as fallen as our emotions are. And so I think in the church community, we need to have a place where people can authentically be themselves, can talk about what's really going on in their hearts, and have people that will help them sit with that rather than correct them, right? You know, that if I'm dealing with grief in the church, it's not uncommon for someone to come along and pat me on the back and say, there, God has it, God's in control. Okay, that's fine. That's an interesting theological statement, but has nothing to do with the loss I'm feeling right now and that I feel completely at the end of my wits trying to contain this pain that I'm feeling, right? We want people to be better, or to say, you quote scripture passages, you know, that the time is coming when, you know, God will blot away every tear. Okay, that's fine. But right now, I don't need a Bible study. I need a human being to be with me, you know, or even temptation. You know, I think it's a very common thing. You know, we talked about men and emotions. Sort of the appropriate place that men are talking about emotions is in accountability groups. And almost always the conversation, for some reason right now in the American Christian church, is about men and pornography and lustful thoughts. All right, well, I'm all for people using less pornography, and I think lustful thoughts is a way that we objectify people and we take advantage and dehumanize them. I don't think we should be doing that. But here's the real issue. If I'm wrestling with lustful thoughts as a man, I don't need another man to tell me, don't have lustful thoughts. I need someone to sit with me and talk through, lust is a form of desire. Why are you having the desire that you're having, right? If there's something in you that's desiring this other person, what's going on in your journey that's leading toward that? Is there a lack of intimacy that you're feeling? Is there a lack of human connection that you're feeling? Are you feeling lonely? Are you feeling depressed? Are you, you know, there's something else that this feeling is information that this feeling is giving you. And if the church is unable to have that conversation, then we never get to root problems. We're always just trying to address behavior. And so we need people who are examples that can say, yep, we can talk about this. It's okay. When I started talking about my emotions as a pastor, it was a monumental deal for our church. I had people say to me, I've never in all of my life had a spiritual leader talk about these things, talk about struggling with these things, talk about bringing these things before God and having them be a part of the spiritual journey. And there were some people who that's not what they came to church for. They needed a package with a bow on it. And I was in a wrecked place and I wasn't a package with a bow. And I could only speak credibly about my own journey. And so those people left. But there were other people who said, this is like fresh water to my soul. The idea that we can talk about our inner life this way and that we can listen to each other and support each other and hear that maybe even God is shaping us in these places, that was revolutionary. And that is what I continue to hear when I talk to people about this. This is a vital part of growing up that we have just overlooked.
Yeah. I think there are a number of folks. I mean, I would say even, you know, certainly as you get older, it seems like a lot of folks can be in denial about stuff. I would say young adults generally seem to be more open to the conversation. But even young adults in their 20s have already taken on a fair amount of baggage from their childhoods or from their own decisions
Sure.
that they've made. So what would be, you know, for someone that's walking around who's probably, you know, say they're pretty unself-aware about, you know, they may say, oh, no, I'm really healthy in this place. I'm really, what are some good, well, I mean, that might be their first indicator. What's the what kind of not to say like litmus test, but just what are some of the good signs to look for or ways that they can really go deeper in this to explore what emotions mean to them, not only taking their personality into account, but just the scriptural, you know, need for us to be real about that?
Well, I think that, you know, for folks in that season of life, you know, you're looking forward to things, right? You're getting into a career maybe, or you're choosing a direction, or you're equipping yourself through school and training, or maybe you're dating, you're thinking about, am I going to have a partner? What's that life going to look like? And so you're looking at all these things. And you might think to yourself, emotional wellness, that's kind of a tangential thing. I'm going to get these other things taken care of first, and then I'll deal with that if I have a problem. But here's the deal. Every aspect of our lives, every single aspect, relationships with each other, relationships to significant others, relationship with God, school, career, performance, family, every single aspect of our life is processed through our emotions. And so whatever's happening in your life right now, your emotions are a part of it. And so if you're struggling with relationships, you know, maybe someone's had a series of dating relationships and they've gone badly and they're wondering to themselves, why is this happening? You know, is it just me? Am I flawed in some way? Am I not beautiful enough to match up to the people that other people are comparing me to? Guess what? Take a look at your inner life. Take a look at your emotional journey and see what you learn about yourself in that area, because that is impacting the way that you interact with other people. That's true in your workplace. That's true in school. That's true in every part of your life. If you will focus on emotional maturity, it will bring a better quality of life to every aspect of what you do. And then the part that was most surprising to me was that digging into my emotional health actually opened up my relationship with God in a way that I completely was unprepared for. I didn't even know that this kind of connection was possible. And it makes sense looking back, because I was relating to God out of a very head place. I was relating to God out of scripture and Bible study, and that was it primarily. And those are great tools, but neither of those things are God. Neither of those things are the presence of Jesus with us now. And so beginning to understand what I was feeling and why I was feeling it created this incredible opening for what, for me, honestly, has been an experience of the Holy Spirit that I never had before. And that took me by surprise. And so that's one of the reasons why I advocate so strongly for this. Every part of your life is being impacted by your level of emotional maturity, and you're not as emotionally mature as you think you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, good point. Okay, well, folks, the book is The Wisdom of Your Heart, Discovering the God-Given Purpose and Power of Your Emotions. And I want to let you know, those myths that we were talking about, those are actually available on our site as a download. Just enter the numbers 534 in the search box, and that will drive you to that. Also, we here at Focus on the Family and Boundless offer free counseling consults over the phone, and we can even give you a referral to a great Christian counselor in your area if you want to go deeper on this and really understand some of the implications of whether stuff from your past or just where you are now, the way you're processing stuff. Mark has just gotten the conversation started. And there's a lot, too, in the book about Jesus and him showing emotion, what that looked like. And I think that's often a misconception, too, about Jesus Christ himself. So, Mark, thank you so much for being part of this conversation.
Thanks for having it with me, Lisa. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.